Hello and welcome to the greenhouse. I'm Brethren the Lull.
And I'm Anna Snow, and we're going to talk about all things planet Earth.
So coming up, touching grass. We're going to do that in a little bit. We're going to discuss the different types of grass here in Arizona and ways to be sustainable about it. And we're going to discuss golf courses. It was not intended to talk about golf courses, but we just learned so much about it during the research process. So we are excited to share.
Yes, but before that, we're going to be talking about conchs. So conchs, if you don't know, they are an animal, not just a pretty shell.
Exactly. They're a mollusk, is what they're called.
They are a mollusk, which is a type of ocean animal, of course, and there are 50,000 different species of mollusks, snails, octopuses, squids, clams, scallops, oysters. These are all different types of mollusks.
Exactly. And conchs, I used to call them conches, conchs, play an important role in the sea. First of all, I want to talk about the size. They can grow up to 2 feet in the sea, making them the second largest snail in North America. Oh, sorry. Largest in North America and second largest in the world.
Wow.
As with all animals we discuss, you know, they're not in a vacuum. They're important in the food chain and the food web.
They are.
Shrimps, crabs, lobsters all eat the conch.
Yes, lots of animals eat conch. And so they are just... they're what's known as a keystone species, which I believe we've talked about others on the show before, or we've touched on the topic. But that just basically means that so many other plants and animals and other things in the environment rely on them, that if they were to disappear or if they become endangered, it affects not just their own species population, but the whole environment.
And a nuance to add about that is that, like, on paper, it might look like they have a little impact, but they have a lot of those, like, intangible skills,
yes,
like you would in sports.
You know, like one thing, you know, we talked about how they are a main source of food for several other species, as well as when they do die or get eaten by these other animals, their shells are homes for hermit crabs and stuff like that. So they continue to be an important part of the environment even after the animal dies.
Exactly. And it goes a little bit more than the environment, too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So conchs are very important to ecotourism in areas like the Bahamas and even in my home state of Florida. There are festivals to honor conchs, and there are at least 8 spanning from June to New Year's. So,
These are all in the Bahamas.
These are all in the Bahamas, yes. The festivals are in the Bahamas.
So tourists absolutely love them, but much more than that. It kind of has, like, intrinsic value to the Bahamas. There's a seal of the conch on, like, the Bahamas logo.
On their flag. I think it's on their flag.
On their flag or, like, governmental
There's
seal.
The stuff they use, yeah.
There are also statues of the conch at, like, you know, the airport when you first welcome. So it's very much a symbol of national pride.
Yes.
Indigenous groups also, you know, value the conch. So it's much more than the sea. It also has a human factor. And tied together, they're so important.
Mm-hmm. And conchs are, people do eat conchs. Conch fritters are like a delicacy. I don't know. They're a food. They're a big source of protein and vitamin E and other important nutrients like magnesium. And according to the AP 2021 study, found that nearly 40% of the area eats 2/5 of the population of conchs.
Exactly.
Which is a little bit math heavy, but I think it makes sense.
Yeah. But unfortunately, conchs are not doing so well right now. Their levels have been declining. And
yes.
They've been declining for a long time, but we just wanted to bring attention to it now.
Mm-hmm.
This trend actually has been noted for a long time, since 1993. That's nearly 30 years. A lot of animals are losing their habitat due to these over-exploitation, ocean acidification, which we've talked about, and habitat loss.
Habitat loss is a big one, as well as I want to talk about tourism for a second. You know, as someone who grew up in Florida, which is a touristy area, but someone who lives there, there's a bad trend of tourists being disrespectful of the area that you are visiting. Like, you are a guest, and I think that you need to be respectful of that. And a lot of people don't realize that conchs are animals. They think it's just a pretty shell, and they find them in the ocean, and they take them out of the ocean, and then the animal shrivels up and dies, and fine, now you have a pretty shell, but you just killed that animal for no reason when another animal could have eaten it. It could have continued to grow, you know. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, before the show, I was like, yeah, well, when my brother was, like, in Boy Scouts and stuff, they would always say, leave no trace. Like, no one should know that you've been there. And I think that extends to a lot of things, even if, not even just tourism, but even if you are someone who lives in a beach area. that you are basically, the beach is beautiful and it's lovely and everybody loves the ocean. But you need to be respectful. That's not your home. That's the home of these animals and this environment. And if you want to continue to enjoy it, you have to be more respectful. And I think that's a thing that a lot of tourists don't grasp. You know, I wouldn't come into your house and start picking up your animals and stuff without permission and leaving trash.
And these conchs are so small, but people take like tons of them at a time.
Yeah.
And they use them for like, it's very similar to like, you know, when people like shoot animals for the sole purpose of like taking their tusks
exactly.
and stuff like
it's
that.
Like, it's like trophy hunting.
Trophy hunting, that's the word.
Exactly. Where I personally wouldn't hunt, but I have much less of a problem with it when someone is feeding their family and they're eating the whole thing as opposed to just getting it to put on a wall. And I think that it is similar. That's an analogy I didn't think of, where people take the conch because it's pretty and they just want it. If you find the shell already washed up on the beach, the animal's probably dead or not even in there anymore. But do not take them out of the water because conchs they live in water. They need the water to survive.
Exactly. And humans taking them is not the only thing that's affecting them. Another big thing we've talked about before is ocean acidification. Just to really bring, just to recap what ocean acidification is, it's when, the ocean absorbs a lot of carbon dioxide, which lowers the pH level.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes it hard for the shells, like these conchs and a lot of other shelled organisms have, to form and become like strong.
It's hard for them to harden. The shells, they can't form enough like layers to get that really hard like shell texture. So then they'll be really thin and they're more likely to break and not protect the animal inside.
Exactly. And that has led to the overall density of these conchs declining. So now mm-hmm. it's affecting not only their outer thing, but like I guess how big they can get.
Yes.
And that's really telling of something.
Another problem is overfishing. So we mentioned that humans do eat them. I mentioned conch fritters earlier. But you still, even when fishing and wanting to eat these animals, you still have to do it in a way that you're not affecting the environment. And overfishing can lead to so many other species not being able to sustain food for themselves.
Exactly. And a lot of, we've talked about overfishing before, and we've always said, oh, you can always like maybe release them later on or repopulate them yourselves. But I'm not really sure how you can repopulate conchs other than like naturally letting them repopulate.
Yeah,
right?
I've never heard of any sort of raising conchs in captivity or a conch farm. As far as I know, the only way that people get conchs is straight from the ocean.
So it's an interesting, it's a solution that would be tough to find because you wouldn't be using your traditional solutions.
Exactly.
According to the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, the NOAA, the species is being overfished. More than a third of these conchs and just species in general are overfished. People, I was talking earlier about like how easy it is to take. You can go in and grab like 1,000 shells per diving trip. They're so small and easy to take. Mm-hmm. You just grab like a handful at a time.
Yeah, so we mentioned earlier that they can get up to 2 feet. That is like a really big deal if they get that big. Most of them don't get that big.
Right.
And there's also several different species of conchs. Some of them will never grow to be that big. Their species just doesn't. So most of them are relatively small, and people will go down there with a big net or bag type thing and just scoop them all up.
Yeah. So it's important to be cautious, and a lot of people are trying to be cautious.
Mm-hmm.
Fishing for conches in Florida, actually, has been banned since 1975. And in 2003, another acronym for you, the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species found that conch fishing should kind of be limited because in 2003, they were going at a pace where it would be unsustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to ban conch fishing from, you know, the Bahamas, Honduras, and Haiti, but it's been really difficult to enforce.
It's not all the way banned. They've just tried to limit it as much as they can. But it's still, I think there's also a lot of people who do it, like, unofficially, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who just go down and do it either for themselves or for, like, people they know, like, as opposed to, like, a big company doing it, you know what I mean? And there are still lots of warnings today. A 2019 report from the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago said that the queen conch fishery could disappear as soon as 2029 if we don't reduce the amount of harvesting and fishing that we're doing.
And that's really close.
That's really close. It's 2023. That's 6 years away.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
And then another thing is just the, we were talking about lack of enforcement, and the reason the lack of enforcement is with money, you know?
Yeah.
Who was willing to go on conk patrol and, right, like, stop people from taking these conks? And they're so easy to hide.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's like in other countries. I've never been to the Bahamas or Honduras or Haiti or anything like that. In Florida, we have, like, sheriffs on boats. Sheriff boats. But if someone's just diving, you can't necessarily know, oh, they're going for conks. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
And also, Florida, it is completely banned. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't think anybody ever does it. But I think it is definitely happening a lot less than in these countries where it's just limited. And
it's
not
also
banned.
So hard because we were talking a lot about intrinsic value. Mm-hmm. It's hard to kind of value how much a conk is worth to people and, like, how much, mm-hmm, you should enforce it.
Yeah.
It's easy to enforce things where it's like, oh, this is this much $1 million. We should protect it. This is intrinsic value. So people may think, like, why are you protecting that silly little shell? But, you know, it has so much value.
It's so much
value.
More than a silly little shell, though.
So that's the status of conks.
Yes.
We'll see if they get better. It's going to be really difficult. So we'll see if there's a solution.
Hopefully there is some sort of increase in their population and a decrease in overfishing.
Mm-hmm. Coming up next, we're going to talk all about grass. The reason, I guess, new solutions you can take to kind of have a good grass in Arizona. Plus, we have some breaking news to tell you about when we come back. You're listening to The Greenhouse on Blaze Radio. Welcome back to The Greenhouse. I'm President Vall.
I'm Anna Snow, and we are going to talk about grass and lawns and anything else about grass. So lawns are everywhere. You know, I think it's part of that classic American dream when everyone imagines their house, it's that white picket fence and a big green lawn.
A big front
lawn,
yard, a big,
you know,
backyard, so many things.
Lawns in the United States total more than 63,000 square miles, which that's crazy.
Which is a lot more than I thought.
That's a lot more, yeah. Right now, more than 80% of people who own a lawn say that having a lawn is an important feature to them when it comes to either renting or buying their home.
Wow, so a lot of people love their grass.
Yes,
but
clearly.
As we know, there's a big problem with grass. It's watering. Here's a little bit of math for you. So grass needs to be watered about an inch to about 1.5 inches every week. So that roughly equates to about 20 minutes three times a week to get to that, like, 1 to 1.5 inch level. And every minute that you use your water is between 12 to 30 gallons of water. So put that together, the every minute, 60 minutes a week, that's about 720 gallons of water on the minimum. So
that's a minimum, too.
Grass, yeah, can be a lot of water.
And it's really important to think about, I think, your environment that you live in. But it also, it can, the time of day that you water your grass can have an effect. Watering in the morning before 10 a.m. or between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. Can be, like, the best time to water.
Exactly.
Which doesn't quite make sense to me, like, how that would have a different...
Everyone knows why you don't water during the day, because,
yeah,
it'll get soaked up immediately.
Yeah.
And I was always told, growing up, water in the nighttime. But it turns out if you leave it, like, too much in the night when the sun's completely gone, that water is going to stay on top of the soil or, like, go in slowly and seep in, but not completely.
Okay.
And it's going to stay there for, like, 8-9 hours. And by that time, your roots of the plant get waterlogged, and basically that kills the plant. It's very unhealthy for them.
The same people watering in the mornings, I think that always made the most sense to me. But also, you know, we live in Arizona. There is a water crisis. There's a drought. There,
yep,
has been for a very long time. In case you missed it, I don't know how. We've talked about it several times here on the show, so our real fans know about it.
Yeah.
but so, you know, people want to have these pretty green lawns. But that's not an essential water use. It's not like taking a shower or drinking water or cooking water, you
exactly
know?
Exactly. Yeah, grass definitely doesn't make the priority.
Yes.
But did you know that there's not one type of grass? In fact, there are several types of grasses. There are more than 12,000 species, in fact, and they all work in various places. So we chose to go in depth on the Southwest region. There's three kind of main types of grasses, but there are several others. Bermuda grass, St. Augustine grass, and Zoysia grass are the most popular. In Arizona specifically, we have something called Bermuda grass. I've seen this in several places. Bermuda grass is really special to a lot of people because it's one of the more heat-resistant gases, as well as the grass itself grows really fast. The best time to plant this grass? Right about now, in the late spring and early summer. So
interesting. I also wanted to talk about St. Augustine grass for a second because I was doing some Googling.
Yes.
That's the main grass that we have in Florida. And in Florida, now I feel like this episode I've talked so much about Florida. Sorry, guys. My whole personality is just being from Florida. Anyway, but growing up, we, never watered our grass. It just rained enough to sustain
naturally
that.
Naturally sustainable.
To naturally do that, which is why I think in places like that, it's fine. I think that, you need to be putting a grass or any type of plant, even if it's not a grass, that's, native and will thrive in the environment that you live in, as opposed to trying to force this grass to grow in a desert where it needs to be watered so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and on the other hand, coming from California, where we're always in a drought, our grass was always brown. Not necessarily, backyard grass, but, the hills and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone just kind of grew comfortable with it.
I actually noticed that when I was visiting one of my friends that lives in Central California, and we were driving all around, all the hills were just brown.
Exactly, and everyone was fine with it, because if you do want to make it green, which is very nice, the windows, that old windows photo, you'd be using a lot of water, and I think everyone knows that trade-off that you kind of get.
Yeah.
In Arizona, the grass that is popular, even though it's heat-resistant, even though it's, doesn't use a lot of water, it still uses a good amount. It's just relative. You need about an inch to about an inch and a quarter, according to one provider of Bermuda grass. So that's not that much different than the 1 to 1.5 inches per week we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, so it's more heat-resistant, so it might last longer, but it still takes the same amount of water. And you can modify the way you water your plants. Instead of using a timer for your irrigation system, you can water it manually. One benefit to this is you can track how much water you're actually using, because if you just have it set to a timer, you're probably not paying attention to exactly.
You're probably not paying attention. It does automatically. A lot of people do it to save time. My home has an irrigation system. Sometimes that leads to overwatering. If you're not checking on your plants every day, but you're just letting the sprinkler run, you may not know that they're getting more water than they need, and you won't be able to see that because maybe you don't go outside often.
Yeah, this is going to be such a random reference, and I hope somebody out there understands it. Have you ever seen the movie Cinderella's Story with Hilary Duff?
Okay.
Because there's a scene. It's trying to show how inconsiderate this stepmom is. And there's a scene where her grass is being watered, and then Cinderella, Hilary Duff comes up. It's like, we're in a drought. You can't be watering. And then the camera pans out to the yard. Everybody's grasses are brown except hers. It's the perfect shade of Kelly Green.
Yeah.
And, it's basically to show how she doesn't care about anybody but herself. But I've been thinking of that scene the whole time we've been talking about this.
I can visualize that.
Yeah. But, we talk about that color change. Most people, I know you want that pretty green lawn, but you can tolerate maybe at least a little bit of color change. Allow your grass to brown some.
And basically, we're just looking for a compromise. Maybe you can, water it and have it a nice green for us a couple months of the year, and then the rest let it be.
Because we do get monsoon season here. Honestly, we've had a pretty wet year so far. There's been a lot more rain this year than I've seen in past years. And one thing you can do, though, if you want that pretty green look but you don't want real grass, is synthetic turf.
Yeah, just as it sounds, it's literally fake grass planted everywhere. No maintenance necessary. Always green, so you'll be, that happy. Little expensive, but it is a one-time cost. It can cost anywhere between $5 to $20 per square foot. So that doesn't cover a whole lot. You'd need a good amount.
Yeah, it'll add up quick. But like you said, it is a one-time, as long as nothing happens to it. Your dog doesn't dig it up or something.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be a one-time
cost. Nothing can get trapped in there. You can't, kick up dirt. Everything will be fine. No animals will chew it up.
There is also you can paint your grass.
Yeah.
If it's that important to you, that it is green.
This went viral in California.
Yeah.
Because people did that.
I've heard of that before. Yeah. You think about football fields and stuff. They're always painting on top of the grass, the lines.
Yeah.
Why not just paint the grass
green?
Your grass green. Yeah.
It's real. Apparently, it actually has its benefits. In addition to the color. Apparently, you don't need fertilizer when you paint it green, because it, I guess, has nutrients.
Okay.
Now, it's a temporary green color, obviously, so you have to do it a couple times. Mm-hmm. We're also calling it painting. It's not really painting. It's called turf paint or turf colorant. It's not the paint you would use on your walls because, you know, that has a lot of chemicals in it.
Yeah, that is my first thought when you talk about painting grass. Is it going to be chemically? Is it going to be bad for the
environment? What if it runs off? You know,
it runs off,
rain,
exactly.
Sewers, exactly. And then leads to the ocean. So this is not actual paint. You do not need to worry about it. Or even, like, you can jump in the grass and you'll be fine. Your clothes won't change color.
I mean, even real grass stains, you know. We also, there are some wonderful lawn alternatives. So if you want plants but you don't want grass, there are plenty of desert native plants and things that you can plant here. I'm reading off a list right here of some options. If you have a more shady area, dichondra clover can be a good option. If it's more of a sunny area, like you don't have a lot of trees blocking, you can do ice plant, which is a little flower, and it comes in lots of different varieties, such as desert ice, cherry sunrise, and rocky point, which that just all sounds so cute.
It does.
You know, creeping rosemary is another one that you can plant in your yard as well. And there's lots of fun things that you can plant that are going to be better for the environment, better for animals, because they rely on those native plants, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, but I want to go back to this, like, one stereotype that we had when we were talking about, you know, the American dream and the visualization of having grass. A lot of people are not willing to change based on the alternatives we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And one group very known for not wanting to change and preserve this authentic grass, golf courses.
Yeah.
A lot of them in Arizona, apparently, as Anna said.
It's the second most, Arizona has the second most golf courses of any state, only following Florida. And this is for two main reasons. One, the weather in states like Florida and Arizona, where it's very warm most of the year. You can play golf most of the year.
Yeah.
As well as all of the, a lot of retirees move here. Retirees are big fans of golf. A lot of them are. Not all of them, probably, but.
So at least it gets utilized. Like, imagine maintaining all these golf courses and then it just never getting used. Because, like, literally one term that they use in golf is the green, you know?
The green,
like,
yeah,
it has to be much more special than, you know, the rest of the golf course.
And we did some research on could golf potentially switch to an artificial turf, and they said no. And when I say they, I mean the professional golfers and the associations and all this stuff. Apparently, it gets too hot, and you can feel the heat through the golf shoes.
Under your feet.
Which is interesting.
It's called heat underfoot. That's what I found. And the golfers, and quoting from the article, it says it can make them uncomfortable. So
it's not injuring, just uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable.
It also said that if you practice on these, like, fake turf, like driving ranges and stuff, it can lead to bad habits.
Exactly. I'm going to quote an article from Foresight Sports. Here it is. It's a little bit long as a paragraph. Many professional and semi-professional golfers find that practicing on a driving range that has a perfect artificial surface leads to habits which do not work on the golf course. A perfect swing on artificial turf does not translate to the perfect drive on the back nine, reducing the value of practice on a driving range with an artificial surface. Again, that was a quote from Foresight Sports.
I want to know what these bad, like, what's, what is it doing? Like, what bad habit are you forming? Like,
maybe
you
won't swing as much power? I don't know.
I don't know.
It's really weird. Because, you know, artificial, have you heard of, like, those golf simulators?
Mm-hmm.
That seems fine. That's not real grass. It's artificial grass,
yeah,
or even worse.
Yeah, people go to places like Drive Shack and Topgolf, which I will admit, people going to those places likely are not professional or even semi-professional
golfers.
Yeah, not
at all. Just, they're going to swing.
But, yeah, exactly. But still, you know, I'm like, but if all of it was AstroTurf, if all of it was fake,
then that's the status quo.
Then,
and then you don't have to worry about, you know,
get
like changing.
Get better shoes, and then you won't form any bad habits.
Exactly. And then there was also the art that if you switch to artificial turf, it could damage your golf club for some reason. But here's my thing. I'm not one to play golf.
I've never golfed
but
before.
But if you're swinging correctly, isn't the goal not to have the club hit the grass? Isn't it to hit the ball off the tee?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I also don't golf. I think when you first hit, you're on the tee, but then once it goes out, unless you happen to get a hole in one, then you are swinging closer to the actual grass.
Right, but then if you're like putting it on the ground though, so much of your pat, like the club, wouldn't be hitting it. You're aiming for the ball, and you want to go like just above the grass so it doesn't cause friction.
That's my understanding. But you know, I will admit when I don't know much about something, and golf is something I don't know a whole lot about.
It's a debate for another time.
All I really know is George Carlin's bit about how golf courses are unnecessary and that we should take all the land that we use for golf courses and build houses for the homeless on them.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see if they do anything. But it seems like there's not a lot of room to negotiate with these golf courses.
Yeah.
That does it for us on today's episode of The Greenhouse. I'm Pratham Vlal.
And I'm Anna Snow. Don't forget to tune in next week for all things Planet Earth.
All right. Have a great day. Bye.